that metal interview.
Absolute legends, thrash legends, Anvil. I'm talking about Canadian thrashers Anvil, who invented, they invented the thrash metal music, the thrash metal genre, if you will, before the Big Four or any of these Big Fours, before Metallica, before Megadeth, before Slayer, before Anthrax, before Testament, before Overkill, and any of these people. There was a band called Anvil from Canada, A-N-V-I-L, Steve Lips Kudlow, guitarist, lead vocalist, and of course Mr. Rob Reiner on the drums originally. Ever since the 70s, they started off as Lips, and as Mr. Kudlow Lips, let's call him Lips, as everybody does, Lips talks to us about the name change and this and that, and why they changed from Lips, the band name, to Anvil. And so they pioneered the style of thrash, in my opinion, and in a lot of people's opinion. Lips, along with Mr. Rob Reiner and the bassist back then, they pioneered that style before Metallica and Slayer or any of these Bay Area or New York based thrash bands. These guys were around. So anyways, so Lips talks to us about this subject and other subjects, past, present, future, and their latest effort, their latest album, Legal at Last. You guys have to check it out. That's their latest effort. You guys have to check it out. There's a video for it called Nabbed in Nebraska. Very, very, very cool video. You guys check it out. And pick up their copy of Legal at Last, along with other copies of other albums. The infamous Metal on Metal. And so I'll cut this short, and I'll let you guys listen to our interview with Lips from Anvil. Enjoy.
I've seen your documentary. I've seen your stories, a couple of interviews, and man, you guys have been through a lot, man. Let's start off with your latest album, Legal at Last. I love the song Nabbed in Nebraska, man. Great stuff. Talk to us about this, the making of this record. Can you talk to us about that?
Well, we recorded it in Germany. It would be last, actually, just over a year ago. The record came out February 14th, and then we went out on tour in about 2 weeks after that, and then 2 weeks after that the tour ended because of the COVID problem.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of what happened. And right now, currently, we've written another album to get ready to record in a year from now.
Oh wow!
And we're gonna try and do this all over again. Everything got scrubbed that we should have been doing all this time, you know, for the last year. We haven't been able to tour, so, you know, if you can't tour, you might as well write. So that's what we've been doing. Other than that, you know, what the hell can you say? It's locked up.
Right. It's just some tough times for everyone, yeah. You guys have been cited to influencing a bunch of bands, man. Many, many bands. Slayer, Metallica, Anthrax, Megadeth, just to name a few. You were playing that stuff before those guys did, man. Do you feel you get the right credit for that, for inventing the thrash style?
Well, no, we didn't really get the credit. Everybody else did that came after us. That's just the way it is. It's not unusual, if you know what I mean. That's the music business. It's not that the band failed. The music business failed the band. You know, the people that we got involved with couldn't help us. And these kind of situations made it impossible to get the credit. You know, when you come from Canada, an American record contract, they kind of don't want to know who you are.
Yeah.
At least that's what my experiences are. We were way ahead of the curve. They didn't know how to market us, and they passed on us. What basically fundamentally happened, we had our first three albums recorded, and when we got involved with David Krebs' management, which is Lieber and Krebs, that's the people that managed Aerosmith, Ted Nugent, Scorpions, Joan Jett. I mean, I can go on for, it's a big, huge list, but, and not to mention Michael Bolton.
Really?
Anyway. It didn't do us much good having a big management, because when the big management went to the major labels basically said, we want your first three albums for free.
Okay.
Give us your first three albums for free. Yeah, we know that they cost the record company, you know, thousands of dollars, but give them to us and then we'll pay you if we sell any.
Yeah.
Well, business doesn't work like that. People don't hand you their, you know, life's work for free, and then they pay me later. It just doesn't work like that. You get an advance or you don't do it. And that's exactly what happened. So the label that we were signed to in Canada didn't hand over the masters to labels in the United States waiting to get paid. I don't blame them. But in the process, the ship left the shore and sailed without us. Yeah. That's it.
How did you come up with that style, man? Were you influenced by other bands such as Motorhead, or how did you beat, for example, Metallica and Slayer to that punch? What would you say was the, how did you come up with that style?
We're older.
There you go. Good answer.
What else are you going to say? I'm two or three years older than those guys. End of story. I was in line first.
Wow.
It's like, you know, what, you know, somebody had to do it.
Yeah.
And let's face it, it's a different kind of situation. We have our drummer, Rob Reiner, is a very, very spectacular, special drummer.
Awesome.
And inventive and innovative.
Oh, yeah.
So when I came up with speed riffs that I thought were like Deep Purple, and he's playing double bass drum to these kind of riffs, that was the invention of speed metal. People never heard that done before. And that's an innovation that's created between a guitar player and a drummer. Only a combination of that could do that. Not a guitar player and a vocalist, but a guitar player and a drummer. That's who's going to create that kind of music, because the faster you play and the more parts you put in, the less important vocals are, and that's basically the direction in which speed metal took. And that's why there's virtually no melody in speed metal, because you can't. There's no time to create a melody in the spaces that you make in the songs, and so it all goes hand in hand. So some of our stuff like 666 is almost void of melody.
Yeah.
But that's the style. That's the stuff that everything, you know, Slayer listened to that and said, okay, let's make a band around that sound.
Yeah.
You know, the syncopation and the ideas that were expressed in songs like Jackhammer or even March of the Crabs became Metallica.
Yeah.
You know, it's actually quite interesting. It's just that when we began and when it all started, there was no such thing as heavy metal.
Right.
That's not, and in fact, at the beginnings of our band, we were called Lips, because heavy metal didn't exist. Was not really, it wasn't called that. It was called hard rock, and that's it.
Yeah.
Or heavy rock. That's what it was called. That's what it was known to me as. And when we put out our first album, it was almost like it was on the edge of the beginnings of what was called heavy metal. And what happened was, when we went and got our first record deal, the record company went, okay guys, we love your sound, we think you're really unique, you've got something special here, but we don't like the name.
Yeah.
Change your name. Being that we had virtually anything in the book to call us, we figured, well, what could be more heavy metal than an anvil? So we called the band Anvil. And interestingly, we had already titled our first album as being Hard and Heavy, and the title, actually, Hard and Heavy, fit the name Anvil a lot better than it ever did with Lips. So that certainly was a positive thing. So that's how that all came together. And of course, calling the album Hard and Heavy was the beginning of our alliteration titles. And then when I came up with the riff for Metal on Metal, to me it sounded like it was saying Metal on Metal. So we called the album that.
Yeah.
And we've kept that kind of the alliteration thing going for all these years, and all of our albums have alliteration titles, which is absolutely amazing and an incredible thing for marketing and advertisement. I mean, let's face it, everything is done like that. But this was a kind of an interesting thing to do. Naming ourselves after an inanimate object really then that becomes kind of like almost like a logo, because it's an inanimate object that has a shape that has almost a commerciality. Everybody knows what an anvil is, yeah, because everybody's watched the Bugs Bunny commercial cartoons.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of things came together for us because it's all at the right place at the right time. But having said that, when it came to getting the record deal at the most important time, particularly in the United States, which was the most important place to have a record deal at that particular time, when I'm talking about between 1983 and 87, and you don't have a record deal, guess what? You've missed the boat.
Yeah.
And that's precisely why, you know, the guy who actually signed Anvil came to see us a year before he saw Metallica.
Oh, wow.
But the poor guy is sitting there and he goes, I don't know how to market this. I don't even know what you call this music. We were ahead of our time.
Are you talking about, you're talking about Zezula?
Well, no. Actually, Zezula's even, what I'm talking about is Michael Allegro,
okay,
the guy who actually signed Metallica to the major deal.
Okay.
That's who I'm talking about. Wow. Yeah, Johnny was interested in us at the same time, and that was like a year before Metallica. Wow. And we had gotten involved with David Krebs, and at that particular time, when you look at Johnny Zezula, who was running a record store out of a flea market, and then you looked at David Krebs, who's got an office in downtown New York City and has managed every fucking major band in the world, who would you go with?
Right.
So like, whoops, it was a mistake, but
right.
not a mistake that you could blame yourself for. Let's put it that way.
You
take your best bet and you go with it. That's what happened. And having done that, it ruined everything. It ruined everything. Well, it didn't really ruin everything. All it did was it just postponed my eventual and imminent fame is what it actually did. That's all it did.
Right.
At the end of the day, everybody that was going to know me knows me. Yeah. You know, when they put the movie out and I was on we were on the Conan O'Brien show and we played Metal on Metal. In one scene, in one song, I was seen and heard by more people than in 35 years of my band.
Wow.
Right? It's so
incredible.
It is incredible. It has its, you know, we have our story, we have the bad stuff, but there's also the good stuff, and the good stuff is what you live for, and that's what is outstanding, and that's what you get remembered for. So it's all good. I have no complaints. I haven't worked a regular job. I haven't done a delivery or gone anywhere or done it. I haven't done a damn fucking thing other than rock and roll for the last 13 years. So I would say that the success that evaded me and I couldn't find, I finally found. So it's all good.
That was one of my questions. Have things changed personally in your life since the documentary? But you just answered it right there. Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
And it's on a worldwide basis. We're not just talking about one particular market. We're talking about, I don't think that there's very few places I haven't been already now.
Wow.
And there's very, very few places that don't want us back. We have not stopped working. So it's really, really worked out well. Is there millions of dollars? Of course there's not millions of dollars. There's no infrastructure left in the music industry for that to happen. And what are you probably scratching your head? What do you mean by that? Well, what do I mean by that? There's no record sales.
Yeah.
What record sales? Who sells records or CDs anymore?
No one does.
Right?
That's it. It's the end of that.
It's all on Spotify or downloaded. The odd person collects the hard copies, but beyond that, there's no real business. The whole entire business is about playing live and selling T-shirts. Exactly. That's how you make your money. That's what I've been doing for 13 years, and I'm making a lovely living, and I'm having the time of my life up until March of this year. And now I've got to wait until this, you know, society and all this fucking shit gets all fucking cleaned up and everybody gets vaccinated.
Yeah.
We can all go back to normal at some point.
You guys have been through a lot, obviously. Is there something you would do different if you had the chance?
No. No.
Nothing. Okay, cool.
To go back in time and change it, well, you can't do that. So there's not much point in contemplating it. Yeah. If I could, I would go back to 1983 after I finished the Forge and Fire album, and I would have fired my bass player and guitar player and hired the bass player that I have now and go move on from there. That's what I would have done. But I didn't. You can't jump ahead for 30 years, you know what I mean?
Right.
You got to live it first.
Any words of advice for new kids forming metal bands and this and that? What can you tell these kids?
Well, ultimately, the most important aspect in playing metal or being in a metal band or even being a musician, you have to write music that no one else can do but you. It's all about finding your own identity, not using somebody else's. It's actually coming up with your identity. And some people would immediately ask, well, how the fuck do you do that? Well, you just do it. That's how you do it. You do it by not thinking about it. You do it by picking up your instrument and playing what's in your heart and what's in your soul, and be creative and imaginative and come up with things that are unique and only to yourself. You set yourself up in your life so that you don't depend on your music to make you money. Another big mistake most musicians make is making everything dependent on the music. As soon as you do that, you will fail. Because 99.9% of music never gets heard and never gets signed and never gets known about.
Good advice. Nice.
So what's left is that 0.1% that are original bands, that are completely original and are fighting fucking people who are doing it because they love it, not because they're looking to make money, so that they can stick around long enough for someone to hear it, notice it, put it out, and then get famous. That's who makes it. And that's how you make it in eventuality. But you got to be willing to put your life into it and do it because you love it, not because you're there because I want to make money. You got to do it for the same reason that Mick Jagger and Keith Richards are still doing it after almost 60 fucking years. They've got banks, their bank accounts are so big, believe me, they're not doing it for music. They love what they do, and that's why they made it as big as they did.
Those guys have been at it since the 60s, for sure. Wow.
That's right.
Which is your favorite Anvil record?
Probably the two best ofs.
Were you combined?
Which makes a lot of sense, don't you think?
Yeah, they're good answers.
Whenever I get asked that, it's like, what could be more obvious? We've got two best of albums. I like those the best. And they were best of albums that were my favorite songs out of the whole pile. So it makes sense that I would say they're my favorite albums.
Now that we're talking about piles and compilations, how do you guys come up with a set list with so many albums and so many good songs, you know?
Well, you actually, what happens is you, as you go, you've picked up a few songs on after each album and you add them to the set. Some stay, some don't. It's not something that you're consciously focusing on. The stuff that stays is the stuff that people love to hear. So you keep it. Stuff that they don't particularly like to hear, you move on and you pick up something else that's new. And that's what you do. And that's what we've been doing for 40 plus years. There are songs that obviously you're going to play metal on metal every night, so that's never going to leave. They... Obviously, you're never going to, you're going to always be playing Mothra. You know, like there's certain songs you're obviously going to be playing your signature songs like 666, which is your influence for speed metal. You're going to be playing March of the Crabs, which is also a top notch past piece of material that you can't exclude. So a lot of stuff is dictated by the popularity of the particular albums in their particular time. So the songs haven't really disappeared from the set. There are those that would criticize some of what we do because in the sense they want to hear the deeper cuts or the other alternative cuts from the same albums. And it's like, yeah, but the problem is that a good 70 to 80% of the audience that is coming to see Anvil today have never seen us play Mothra because it's their first time seeing Anvil.
Exactly.
So you got to take into consideration that most people haven't seen the band still to this day.
Yeah.
And that's who's really mostly coming to see us, especially as a result of the movie. So playing certain choice cuts from the old days and keeping them consistent in that regard is the way to go. You don't play your deeper cuts so that they've never heard. Obviously, everybody's heard Metal on Metal. You've got to play that, yeah. Right? And it makes sense that you are playing it. You don't take that out of the set.
I watched the documentary, the movie, The Anvil Story, a couple of times, a bunch of times, actually. It's real moving, man. It's real, it's awesome. It's you guys sleeping in train stations, fighting with club owners to get paid, etc. Here's a dumb question. Was there anything staged or all these real stories?
No, that's the whole thing. They filmed us for 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's rough.
That's filmed over 3 years, yeah. Staged. I have to laugh. edited.
There's some rough stories.
That means anything, right? It's got to be made into a story so that it makes sense. So it's got to be edited. But staged, no.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Wow.
Not one fucking thing that I can think of. No.
Talk about adventure. That's a tough adventure, man.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, the guy starts filming and it's kind of made its own path. You don't guide it or try to act. Like, we're not actors.
Wow.
A lot of people thought we were, though. A lot of people thought that was an acted movie, you know.
I had somebody ask me that question. Do you think the Anvil movie was staged or pieces staged? I was like, I don't think so.
No, and that's the thing. Because it's so... Some of it's so heart-wrenching, you can't believe and the emotion is so deep that you're almost convinced it's acting. But actually, it's the other way around, and it's interesting because, as an example, Sir Anthony Hopkins watched the Anvil movie, and he was so blown away by the directing, in the sense that you evoked. But when I say you, and he was talking to the director, that he evoked such depth in reality, and it's not even an actor.
Yeah.
You know, the level of emotion was so intense, and it's being conveyed by someone who isn't even an actor. That's about the camera going on at the right moment, and the way that it's edited into the movie, and where it fits, and how it fits. Well, Anthony Hopkins was so impressed that he had the movie company actually hire Sasha Gervasi to direct the movie Hitchcock.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's just an example of that's how actors looked at the movie. I mean, and there were many moments and many actors that I met along the way that have seen the movie and that have actually become kind of acquaintances, and it's actually absolutely phenomenal, and they think it's the most amazing thing they've ever seen.
Yeah.
One of the first actors that was super impressed was Robert Redford.
Really? Oh.
Yeah. When Sasha had sent the movie to Sundance, Robert Redford watched the movie and he was like fucking blown right the fuck away, right?
Wow.
That it got into Sundance,
yeah.
And it was the People's Choice movie of that particular year.
Awesome.
So it's it was extremely outstanding. There's a lot of hard work, especially in the release of that movie. I was waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do interviews virtually all day for weeks and weeks on end. Really? I was traveling all over the world, going to all kinds of film festivals and doing Q&As everywhere. On the release of the record, of the release of the movie, the band actually toured all over the United States, playing in the actual movie theaters. The movie would play, and then we'd come out as a surprise at the end of the movie and play 4 or 5 songs.
I heard about that. Yeah. Wow.
So this was an extraordinary, revolutionary thing. The movie was a huge success. It relaunched my entire career, and it hasn't dissipated at all. We are now 13 years since that movie came out, and people are still talking about it. I'm still talking about it. I'm still doing interviews. It's still as relevant today as it was then.
There is a scene in there where I could relate to, because I play in a local band. I'm a musician too. And I went through that same thing you went through when you were trying to get your money, when you couldn't get paid by some club owner, bar owner.
And yeah, that's pretty common and typical.
Yeah.
But having said that, it's not like that happened to me a lot of times. Yeah. And in fact, the real truth is, that might have been the second time in 45 years that I had a situation like that.
Wow.
Only that particular time, I had a camera watching me, and I wasn't going to take it lying down.
Yeah.
Or bent over. I'm going to fucking kick the shit out of this fucking guy. No one's going to fucking rip me off.
Yeah.
And let the whole world see that I'm going to take that. I'm not going to put up with that.
Right.
And I went, that's my fucking temper, man.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That's just not fair. I mean, you showed up late or whatever, and you
know. Well, the whole thing is, then why are people yelling, you know, Anvil, very good. The place is still fucking packed. What's your fucking problem, man?
Yeah.
You're selling booze? What's your fucking problem? Pay the band.
Right. These people
are really, really stupid, man. The guy was, ultimately, the guy was looking to get out of having to pay us. It had nothing to do whether we were late. It was, of course, frustrating for him and very worrisome, but there were 3 or 4 cover band or opening bands.
Yeah.
We got there and loaded in and played.
Yeah.
Rather than set up all of our equipment and have everybody play in front of it. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The only difference is that we played after the cover band, after the support bands, which we were supposed to, but we didn't make them set up in front of our own in front of our equipment.
Yeah.
So there was a lot more room on stage for all the support bands than there would have been. So in a certain sense, we did everybody a favor, and then at the end, the guy wants to fuck us. So it's like, wow.
Not fair at all, man. It's not fair. Messed up, man.
Yeah, that's it. But it's not fair. It's not meant to be, and no one says it has to be.
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
Are there any plans for a second movie or a documentary?
No. There were, but it kind of went away. And I don't really care. Nor here nor there for me, as far as I'm concerned. The job was done. I don't really need to go through that anymore. Why? What's the point?
Yeah. Now here's.
And that's how I feel about it. What's the point? I'm living the sequel.
Exactly.
That's better.
That's way better.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about Rob Reiner, your best friend. How does it feel having a friend like that since you were kids? It must be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that everybody does, and I didn't realize that not everybody does, but I suppose that both of us came to realize that we were pretty lucky to have that. But you, like anything in life, you take it for granted. You don't start thinking, you know, the only way that you're going to appreciate having parents is if you don't have parents.
Yeah.
If you understand what I mean, you kind of take what you have for granted, and it was what you don't have that you kind of like, I wish I had it. So I guess that's the best way that I could explain it. So it's not a matter of you realize that you're lucky, you realize that it's all good, but you're not over, it's not something you emphasize and think about it all the time. No?
You can see it in the movie, you can see the friendship, man, you can see the bond, the It's just awesome. You can see right through, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Here's a different question. What's your best gig and your worst gig? I mean, we've all seen the documentary, but...
Best gig? That's impossible to think of.
Yeah?
That's impossible to think of. I don't know. What are you going to say is the best gig? Could have been opening for Saxon. It could have been opening for AC/DC. It could have been opening for Metallica. It could have been opening for Motorhead. It could have been... And the list can, you just keep going on and on. And if you say one, then you're discounting all the others. So, no, there is no real favorite.
Yeah, it's too many of those.
What's the worst gig I've ever played? I'm trying to think, you know. And even that is, I did a New Year's at a rehearsal place that we used to have rehearsals at. And it must be about 15 to 20 years ago, and no one was there. the guy gave us free rent and everything, so he set us up on stage. We had done a sound check and everything. We came up, we went to go play, and there's like no one there. So I go, well, why did you, where is everybody? He goes, I don't know.
Really?
No one showed up to the party.
Wow.
Wow. So he said, okay, well, what the hell, we set up and we might as well play a bit. So we played a bit, and then we tore it all back down and put it back in the rehearsal room, and that was the end of it.
It was a quick rehearsal.
Yeah, well, all we did was, you see, they had a big room, this big, huge room with a stage in it, and then there were the other rooms that were just our rehearsal rooms, right? So all we did was move our stuff down the hall and set it up on the stage and played, but there's no one there. No, who's going to come to a rehearsal hall for a New Year's party? Like... I don't know. Right. And the guy wants money when you get to the door, because he's gone out and bought booze. He's got like fucking, you know, 20 bottles of whiskey and all this shit, and no one showed up. Well, so he had to take it all back. He took all the stuff after the weekend. He took all the booze back to the liquor store, and they took it back. But still, he had something like a couple thousand dollars worth of bottles there.
What a story, man. And, wow.
Yeah, a story. And that's what... And, you know, generally, we don't play New Year's. I've only played a couple New Year's in all my years.
Yeah.
And only the I did two New Year's gigs in Timmins, Ontario, back in 1980. It might have been the New Year's of 1979 going to 80, and 80 to 81. Those two New Year's I played up in Timmins, and then the next one was like probably that rehearsal room, that rehearsal thing, and then a third one was at the same place, you know, where I had my 50th birthday.
Oh yeah,
I saw that. At that same place. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I generally, that's it. We just don't play New Year's. It's not a good idea.
Yeah, I understand. I see you guys have a 2021 European tour coming up.
Yeah, it's the remainder of the tour that we had started in March. So we're hoping that by next October, November, we're able to go out and play again.
Yeah, hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Right, hopefully. So that was one of my questions. What can fans expect from Lips and Anvil in the future, after the COVID thing, of course? Any U.S. tours, any...
We're planning on it, but we have to wait until we can. There's no sense. Well, right now, we can't even cross the border, so there's no sense. You can't get work visas. You can't even plan it.
Yeah.
You can't even plan for the thing, because there's... No one knows. You can't... So, we'll see.
Yeah.
But we are very due to come to the USA, to at least for the Legal at Last tour. We haven't done it yet, so yeah, we're due to do it. And let's hope that this COVID thing goes away soon enough that we can. Certainly, it's not going to happen in the next 2 months. That's for sure.
Yeah. Would you like to send a message to the rock metal fans listening to this podcast?
Well, I'd just like to say I can't wait to get back to touring, just like everybody else in this business.
Right.
And, you know, I wish everybody to stay safe, try to stay healthy, eat properly, sleep properly, so even when the COVID hits, it doesn't do anything to you, okay? So I've already been there and done it, and it's not the nightmare that they're making it out to be. If you're not old and compromised health, you're definitely going to be fine.
Appreciate the time, Lips. Appreciate making time and all that.
Okay, have a good night. I'll speak to you soon.
We invite you to listen to our radio show, our radio station, J-Rock's Metal Zone, at jrocksmetalzone.com to hear the latest metal, rock, metal, old school metal, and all kinds of metal for you guys. JRocksMetalZone.com, that is. And, of course, to all the people that support our podcast, that Metal Interview podcast, thank you for supporting us on Spotify, Deezer, and wherever you might listen to our podcast and your podcasts, because without the public, we are nothing, really. So thank you, public. Thank you, rockers, thrashers, headbangers, guys and girls. Thank you for supporting our podcast. And we hope you guys enjoyed our interview, our chat with legendary Steve Lips Kudlow, lead vocalist, guitarist for Anvil, Rob Reiner on drums, Chris Robertson on the bass guitar, and you guys can find him online, Anvil. Go check him out, support this band, support their albums, stream, download, purchase merchandise. Now that a lot of bands are not working, a way of supporting rock metal would be to purchase merchandise, t-shirts, hats, headbands, or whatever they might have on their website for sale. So go ahead and do that. It's a good way of supporting these guys. So thank you for people that send in fan questions and all that. So thank you for supporting us on social media. Thank you for people that subscribe to YouTube, our YouTube channel, and all that stuff. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So anyways, don't forget to keep it metal.
That Metal Interview.